Welcome to The Gauge, a new podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets. Your host today is Green Gauge's CEO, Sean Kiernan, who is in conversation with Charles Dellingpole, founder and CEO of Comply Advantage. Sean and Charles will discuss the challenges of compliance for cryptocurrency and blockchain companies, including what's distinctive about building an anti-money laundering program for a crypto firm versus a traditional company. Where can crypto firms expect to see big regulatory changes this year? How can firms manage sanctions risks in real time? And are there any emerging threats crypto compliance teams should be aware of?
It's an absolute pleasure to have you join our episode. You've built Comply Advantage from the ground up for the past 9 years, which is an eminent success. I understand it might be a unicorn shortly, if not already. And I think one of the things we're really excited to speak about with you today is the whole world of what you do around the AML space and our world of the crypto space and the way that they intersect. Thank you for coming.
It's great to be here in the heart of Silicon Victoria, a huge vibrant cluster of crypto companies, tech companies and terracorns all in close proximity. So yeah, it's great to visit you in the epicenter of the crypto foment.
In the beating heart of Silicon Victoria. Silicon Valley, watch out.
Yeah.
I think we should go straight into it just because we know you're an expert in your field. And one of the things that's very pressing for us, and I think for the whole ecosystem of crypto, including regulators and banks, are essentially what are the differences between compliance for crypto companies and for generic companies? And as the CEO and founder of Comply Advantage, I couldn't think of anybody else better to ask.
Great question. So Comply Advantage, we work with 1,500 companies across fintech, banking, payments, corporates, insurance companies. So everywhere where there's movement of money or underlying client relationships, that's where we're relevant. And we also have a good client base in crypto as well. So some things are the same, other things are different. Fundamentally, for both crypto and non-crypto, you have to understand who you're interacting with. And therefore, you need to understand, is this person or company, are they someone bad? So bad could mean, are they a politician who's corrupt, who's exfiltrating government funds like we saw in the Warren MDB scandal? Are they linked to a sanctioned Russian weapons company? And are you, in fact, helping the proliferation of technology to Russia when that entity is sanctioned? So irrespective of the industry, vertical or mechanism of payment, you need to understand the counterparty. What's different really between crypto and non-crypto is that there is some asymmetry in terms of the regulations, in terms of the oversight, in terms of authorization. So I think we'll come on to it later, but often in crypto, you might not understand who the beneficiary of a payment is, whereas in fiat, you have to understand that. And therefore, regulators have been railing against the asymmetry, and they often see crypto as being the equivalent of Swiss unnumbered bank accounts, whereby there's no transparency as to the flow of funds. With US dollar payments, every single payment has to go through a New York bank, as in irrespective of the country and the counterparties. If it's a Russian company paying a Iranian company, that US dollar payment still goes via New York. So lots of similarities, but also lots of differences as well.
What do you think about coin forensics? And is that a tool that can potentially solve the case of SWIFT you gave with New York banks? Is there a way with the public blockchains to approximate that?
So at Comply Advantage, we do two main things. Firstly, we do the underlying database of 15 million bad people and companies. And then we also do the behavioral pattern analysis. So we have a platform which, once you give the payments and the counterparties, it'll tell you where there's indications of money laundering, like cuckoo smurfing or people trying to circumvent controls. What we don't do is the underlying on-chain analytics. For that, we partner with companies like Elliptic to augment the data that we have with those risk scores. So, but where we do come in is with companies like your neighbor in Silicon Victoria, Transact, who are fiat crypto on off ramp. So when you use MetaMask one of the options is Transact. So there, all those payments get screened through Kabai One, both for the behavioral analytics and also for the counterparties. So I think in terms of coin forensics, that kind of began with the Mt. Gox hack and exfiltration. So you could point to a wallet address being linked to a certain person, and that's compounded from there. So where you can link a wallet to a person, then you can use on-chain forensics to look at the counterpart and deduce insights from there. But because there's this proliferation of different chains, as in to do it properly, you need to be able to do Bitcoin, Ethereum, all the different protocols. So that's a whole industry in itself, and that isn't one that we do ourselves. So it's so vast and so huge, like what we did.
So a step in the right direction, but perhaps not the silver bullet.
I mean, when you listen to people under interrogation in the US Treasury, like select committees, they always say, it was at Davos, and I asked the Brett from FTX, I was like, it was a panel on crypto sustainability in terms of energy usage. So I asked at the end, I was like, hey, to what extent do you feel money laundering is an issue? And he was like, with platforms like on-chain analytics, it's a solved problem. And evidently it's not. And evidently it's an arms race between money launderers, criminals, and sanctioned people and their adversaries in law enforcement. And a key conduit for illegal funds is the kind of fiat crypto off-ramp. For instance, if you had a Turkish exchange which was hacked and or the CEO ran off with all the funds in an exit scam, taking not only the cash and Bitcoin, but also all the verified identities of the million users, then not only do they have the money, but also they have the identities of those people whose funds it was. And unlike Razzle Khan, where they sold $5 billion in a hack, here you have both the funds and the means to exfiltrate those funds. Like the issue with Razzle Khan and Heather Morgan was that she could only disperse in $50 Walmart vouchers, right? Whereas if you got the identities underlying it all, then that means you should be able to open accounts in those people's names overseas and then exfiltrate it at scale. So does on-chain analytics solve money laundering? People say it does in the industry. Does it? Like, probably not.
Good. In the vein then, perhaps, of following regulatory environments and seeing what's happening around addressing, I'm going to say this, the Swift example of a fiat payment rail, how do we build that into the crypto space? There is now guidance from the Financial Action Task Force, or FATF, around instituting the travel rule, which will be quite a big step change for our industry. Could you maybe talk to that and also things that you're looking at as a firm like Apply Advantage for how that will shape not just what you do, perhaps if you're not doing coin forensics, but some of the monitoring checks and maybe the repercussions that we'll have?
Travel rule is what you already have in banking, as in if I send a payment to you in a banking app, then I tell the banking app your name and your address and who you are. Whereas for a long time, that was never present in crypto. Now, like, I think I saw this message by Coin Bureau, like Guy at Coin Bureau, the weekend, saying that there's more AML and KYC on a payment in crypto than there was on a $600 million standard loan, right? I don't think it's hyperbole. So I think it's simply the equalization of crypto with non-crypto regulations, whereby you have to say who the payment's going to, right? Because then you can screen them for sanctions and you can tell if that person's like a terrorist or a money launderer. So a huge backlash in terms of anonymity, but really it's the basic ground rules. And so in terms of how you actually implement that, there's this Cambrian explosion of startups who are attempting to be the main mechanism through which that is controlled. There are standardized protocols as well as companies who want to be the central repository for that information. I invested in Nota Bene, which is done and signing up quite a few clients, but I think there are like maybe 10 other companies trying to do that. There are consortia of blockchain firms trying to group together the standardized protocols. So there isn't like a clear winner yet, although some of these companies are doing well in terms of making that a standardized mechanism. But it shouldn't be as controversial or as challenging as it seems to be at the moment. And I think in a couple of years' time, it should all be largely resolved, but it really is a critical element to solving money laundering in crypto.
That's a very interesting turn of events that companies are seeing this as a business opportunity. Of course they would. Something I know you and I have discussed in the past is around the idea of a digital identity or digital passport for an individual if they were to onboard with a firm. maybe you could work with, say, a few firms as an individual or a company and allow them to onboard you should you have been vetted previously as bona fide. Do you think that's something directionally? I know crypto is a subset of the much broader spectrum of currencies that you observe, but do you think digital identity is something that we will see in our lifetimes, if at all, or is this just a subset within a subset, the likes of Nota Bene, etc.?
So we work with most, nearly all of the identity companies. It does they all embed our data in their platforms, right? So like OnFido, Jumio, Socure, all these guys like embed our data, like they sell strawberries, we sell cream, and therefore they bundle it basically, right? So it's just waiting, like you have to gain scale by selling it across the board, right? So because like we're now 430 people, right? It's like a very expensive game to play, right? And they're all expensive people. So identity, the past 10 years has been moving identity from a bank branch into a phone, right? And I think operational cost dimensions of it are, rather than having a branch costing £1 million a year, you can have a £1 per search check from one of these firms, and all the firms have done well, right? So the market size is probably 3-4 billion. Like all these companies have raised that unicorn valuations. Each person, if they're opening accounts, they're going to have 20 accounts, each paying £1, right? So that's, that per unit cost is much higher and than say an AML or sanction check that we offer, right? So very lucrative, right? I think intuitively in 10 years time, you aren't going to move, you aren't going to have a document, a passport and a selfie to verify identity. So like in Scandinavia, you have bank ID. In Singapore, you have a centralized database from the government. So I think in the US, the passports and driver's license go into Apple. So you have a kind of wallet. I met in the past week people trying to do identity for businesses as a kind of ML KYC utility, both, and also trying to do the same for people as well. So all the identity companies always talk about doing it naturally and trying to offer, rather than be a kind of spot solution that everyone offers like per check, they want to bundle it so you can just simply log into like an OnFido, have that wallet already there. That has never really worked that I've seen, right? So, and it doesn't work because the real issue is fraud, right? As in, it's still difficult to isolate fraud when you become identified. So the only way to really solve it is to have a person holding the passport saying words, right? Otherwise it could be exfiltrated from a stolen exchange, right? So, and it's only beneficial at massive scale, right? Yes. So in terms of having a kind of wallet isn't useful for the first one, only useful for the second one. And the marginal cost reduction isn't worth it in terms of the increased risk of fraud. Plus lots of the underlying legislation says you need to have a recent identity, right? So you can't have it like the something that's much older, right? So plus the way it interacts with things like credit bureaus, right? So you need to have a live check. That'll cost money from Experian, Equifax, right? You need to have the verified identity with the biometric selfie. And so having a wallet doesn't really work, right? I mean, it doesn't reduce fraud. It doesn't really solve any problems. It just means that you get a slightly lower cost for the identity provider. The person signing up doesn't really care either, right? So it isn't really a problem that's going to be solved. But the current solution of having passports and credit bureaus, it's clunky, but it's like pretty cheap. So, but I don't think in 10 years time, that's going to be the solution. I think probably you'll have some sort of like online automated solution that relies much more on things like Stitch or kind of passwordless logins. And so I think people are trying to do it via DeFi, as in you can show, you're able to show if you have ownership of an NFT. So I think that whole area should evolve, and probably it will be the incumbents who deliver that innovation or a government-led initiative. So yeah, it seems clunky now. It kind of works, but I think I wouldn't expect like huge immediate shifts in that.
It's fascinating. I mean, that whole space, and I think firms like Comply Advantage are at the cusp, really, of stitching it together to help build consortiums.
We haven't really tried to do identity. I think it's just, I think there are so many companies doing that, right? And you always see like Money 2020 2 weeks ago, there's always 15, 20 new companies offering the same, because you can get going, you can find a couple of clients and they'll pay you like $100,000 for that, right? It's and they'll always have more tailored, customized demands, right? Like in Germany, you need to have video. And so yeah, it's fairly easy for a company to get going and raise money and exist. So because the market's so huge and the prices are so large and the propensity to pay is high as well. So
and the user experience ultimately is what matters.
So we basically partner with all these companies, right? So they all we have a decent sized partner channel, right?
Perfect.
So they would just embed us in their system and everyone's happy.
I'm glad we went down this channel. But I'm going to take us back into the regulatory space. Regarding really trends, if you will, that you see coming in the next year. We've talked already about FATF and the travel.
Yeah.
Are there any other kind of high-level topics that the world of crypto and AML compliance are looking at?
I'd say in terms of important regulatory trends, I think the EU is trying to get some sort of foundational crypto regulation live. There are some sort of long acronym that I forget. I guess France have authorized Binance lobbying Macron. And so I think the EU wants to formalize some sort of crypto legislation such that they can get authorized a lot faster, seeing the kind of technology business opportunity. That isn't happening anytime soon in the UK, I don't think, right? Even though the government, or at least the Treasury, is saying that, right? So, but in terms of trends around crypto and AML, I think there'll be more around identity in terms of that will obviously mature. There'll be more around the travel rule. I think we still see huge demand and huge numbers of new companies being formed. Maybe they're not getting licenses, but like we have this kind of early stage program whereby we have 200 companies that are pre-launched using us. And so we have a good view of the market there. And yeah, I think demand is still like as large, and there are still 100 neobanks being birthed every year, right? So yeah, I think still more innovation.
Definitely. And I think Greengage hopefully will have something to contribute.
Greengage obviously is going to be in the elite vanguard of that, right? So
yes, of course.
I hope.
In terms of taking that then the broad landscape into specific practice for, say, a compliance officer at a firm, are there any emerging threats that crypto compliance teams should be aware of in the technology itself?
Yeah, I think in terms of like typologies, there are always new groups and new threats to be aware of. You have things like cuckoo smurfing, right? Which is, smurfs are small Belgian like gnomes, small blue Belgian gnomes, right? I think. And cuckoos are people who move people out of their nest, right? So cuckoo smurfing is basically whereby you take, say, people with clean identities like students and ask them to move money for you, right? And so someone doesn't flag on entity risk, but their name is clean, would flag on behavioral risk, right? So that's what you need for that. Is what we have is on the platform is a kind of 100 different rules, and but both for fraud and AML, right? So you can just pick and choose based upon the segments you're serving and the countries you're serving, which threats and typologies you should be aware of. You go into the library, activate them, and suddenly you're protected, basically, right? So yeah, so we're happy to share those rules with you, right? And they're constantly changing, and the different geographies, they're different gangs. Like ultimately, they're people behind the schemes.
There's something to the DeFi story, and where do you think it's going?
So I think quite a lot of crypto is premised upon country-specific opportunities, right? So within the US, you have ACH. You have all industry companies who are built up around this 3-day lag in ACH payments, and who like are catalyzing upon things like synthetic identities and some solutions for that, right? All that is because of the flawed US payment infrastructure, right? Within Argentina, you have the green and red peso, right? Like you have the fiscal exchange rate and the non-fiscal exchange rate. Within Africa, you have all these companies targeting the latest Nigerian legislation around whether or not you are to use dollars. And like companies like WorldRemit have had issues there, right? So because suddenly their key business of US dollar to Naira foreign exchange revenues is being outlawed, right? So I think, so crypto has capitalized upon being like it isn't a monolith. There's always specific opportunities within each country and industry and vertical, right? So I think the important thing is that it's structurally lower cost and programmable, and the range of opportunities and use cases are still to be fully determined, right? So Axie Infinity, if you can actually make it interesting, would be a great use case. If people were actually playing and paying money at the same time. And so, yeah, I think the underlying question is like the end market cap, right? In terms of it's gone from three trillion to a trillion, right? So like, is DeFi and crypto, like, depending on like certain inputs, is it allowed by certain governments to prosper? Is it allowed to become a core piece of underlying payment functionality, or is it simply a kind of sandbox to force national payment schemes or international payment schemes to evolve faster? Like you've seen things like Pix in Brazil, or Aadhaar and UPI in India, like all those things compete to an extent with crypto. So yeah, I think it's a super interesting area, but ultimately we rely on Greengage and companies in their wake to set the pattern.
I think we discussed the Cambrian explosion and the various fascinating things that are emerging. Silicon Victoria out. Thank you very much, Charlie.
Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to The Gauge, Greengage's monthly podcast series. Subscribe to the podcast to stay informed of all our upcoming shows and keep up to date with the latest blockchain and digital asset analysis and thinking.